Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. I have been reading this guy's books for years. I've been following his work forever. All right. I'm not a sports guy. Before we started this interview, Kevin, who just won? What did they win?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So I'm a sports fan. The Tampa Lightning just won game 5 of the playoffs.
Of what sport?
Hockey. Okay, sorry.
The way your eyes lit up, the way that you got carried away when you... I don't know about that. Here's what I used to watch. Infomercials. Infomercials, dude.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad.
Many of your infomercials.
I hope you bought something, too.
I didn't buy nearly as much as I watched. Like, I was a kid. I would watch the Ginsu knives where the guy would... Didn't he chop wood with the knife?
We chop Christmas trees, mufflers, sneakers, you know, big, thick pieces of rope, pipe, you name it. And every now and then we'd use it on food too, you know?
Yeah, every once in a while. Then you go, and by the way, you can slice bread so thin you can almost see through it. Let me show you what we could do with the tomato. Now let's go back to how we can cut a piece of paper.
You know, this is when I learned that we call them the power demos, right? That I'm like, why are we taking a knife and cutting through mufflers? And it's like, it's showing the power of this knife. If it can cut through a muffler, it can certainly cut your roast beef, right? You know, so it worked. You know, this is the early days. We had a lot of fun.
Were you an infomercial person? Well, let me introduce him. This is Kevin Harrington, whose voice you're hearing. He is, I think at this point, you might be more well known for being one of the original sharks on Shark Tank. To me, you will always be the person who wrote the book Act Now, which I freaking loved years ago. You're the guy who brought the Ginsu knives to our home, the Flying Lure, Billy Mays, Tony Little, Jack LaLanne became, these people were celebrities or were made into infomercial celebrities because of you. George Foreman, food safe. I didn't even like food when I was a kid. I was under 100 pounds for much of my life. I would watch the Food Saver infomercials you created. And he's got a brand new book out, Mentor to Millions. I think this might be, in many ways, the best book that you've written. Here's why. All I'm seeing is like the hustler attitude. Boom, boom, boom. We're going to create. And then something takes off. What's the thing that took off the most for you? Is it the Ginsu knives?
Actually, the biggest, and it just keeps on giving, the gift that keeps on giving, Tony Little.
Tony Little, the exercise guy.
Yeah, I met him in the late 80s. And he had, we did a product called Target Training because he had a system you could target any body part. So if women wanted to get rid of something under their arms or their love handles, you could target those body parts. That did 350 million in sales. Then we did the ab isolator that did over 400 million. And then we did the gazelle. And the gazelle was $1 billion when it ended up rolling out all over the world for years.
All infomercial money? Or
all
you guys-
infomercials, yeah. But it starts on TV, then it goes to retail, and then it goes international. So, I mean, we made, with Tony Little, we were airing Tony Little back in the early 90s all over, I mean, in 100-plus countries. Because that's the other thing that I'm kind of known for in my business. I, you know, was one of the creators of the infomercial itself back in the early 80s. But then in 1990, I had this big library of shows and I said, well, wait a minute, don't movies go to Europe, Asia, Latin America, dubbed in the local language? Why can't I do it with infomercials? And I opened an office in London, in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, in Sao Paulo, Brazil, in Tokyo, 90, 91, 92. And we went from 100 million a year to 500 million a year in sales because we were running all around the world instead of just in the United States.
This thing started when what? I guess you were doing franchise sales, right? And then that's how you got into infomercials?
I was a serial entrepreneur going way back. So when I was 11 years old, my dad, he was a bartender, but he said, hey, I saved up enough money. We're opening Harrington's Irish Pub. And, you know, let's come on to work, you know? So I was working there, but then I said, Dad, I want to make real money. You know, you're in the restaurant business. He said, you got to start a business. So he mentored me and, you know, I really believe in mentors, and thank you for mentioning my book, Mentor to Millions, because that is how I ended up learning all the things that I've learned to this point, and my father was my mentor to begin with.
Tell me more about your dad. He sounds like a fascinating guy. He got the bar himself, right?
Yeah.
And then he wasn't satisfied with the bar. He saw that the cushions were ripping. Am I right?
Yeah, you read my books. That's crazy.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so my father was also a serial entrepreneur, because so he's got this restaurant and bar that he's running, you know, many hours, I mean, 18 hours a day, and he's there almost all the time, but he's also seeing that this is getting ripped. So now he starts a vinyl repair business, and he and I are running around to other restaurants. And then we were doing
and pitching them and saying, do you have any vinyl seats in the, do you have any of your booths that are being cut? We have this hot air gun, like a blow dryer type of thing.
Yeah. This thing heated up and they had the paints that you could match the colors.
But were you, Kevin, as a kid pitching them? Is that you?
Oh yeah. I was going door to door to restaurants and with the pack and telling them I could repair their vinyl. We also had a lamination machine, because today you get your driver's license and Social Security are in a nice piece of plastic. Back then it was in a piece of paper. So I'm installing laminating machines around the different bars and restaurants, because that was another one.
Bars would laminate people's cards?
You, as a consumer, you put that in and you laminated your own cards, right? So, you know, and then my dad, one day he told me, he said, hey, there, you know, hotels have all these guests, they travel, they're tired. He cut a deal with a company called Magic Fingers. Mm-hmm. And we had a contract with Holiday Inn to install all the Magic Fingers in between the box spring and the bed, stick a quarter in it, boom, it vibrated the bed. And that was huge. I mean, it took off like crazy all over the country. We had certain territories. But so here I am, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, working in all my dad's deals. And then when I was 15, I started a driveway sealing business.
Let's pause it there.
Right?
Okay. I'm sorry to pause it there. Why did your dad do this? My hunch is, reading the book, it's your mom wanted to live in the nice neighborhood. Your dad couldn't afford it. He got the junkiest, is junkie the wrong word? He got the least expensive house in the nicest neighborhood.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
My sense was you felt a sense of inferiority compared to the other kids who were better off than you. Did he feel that too? Yeah. And want to work harder to make more money?
Look, I mean, one of my buddies, his father, I lived on a street that had the upper part was all new houses and mansions. Yep. And so we went to but they came down the street to go to the grade school that we went to, Cardinal Pacelli, a Catholic grade school. And when one of my buddies turned 16, he had a brand new TR6 car that was probably at that time, and this is back in the 70s, probably an $8,000 car. Okay. Today it's probably a $60,000 car. If they still make them even, I don't know. But anyway, I wanted my own car too. So I bought an MG when I was 16, paid cash for it.
How?
I had my own business. Okay.
What was the business?
I started a driveway sealing business when I was 15, knocking on doors, pulling the people out of their house, showing them the cracks in their driveway. And I said, look, it gets cold in Cincinnati. In the winter, the water will freeze triple the size of that crack if you don't get some sealant in there. Of course, I'll seal it, and then I'll blacktop your whole driveway with beautiful tar. And so I was doing 10 jobs a week at the age of 15. So when I turned 16, I had a little pile of capital in my pocket, and I bought a car, paid cash for it. And my dad, there were six of us, right? So my mom wanted the kids to go to the best schools. And so my sisters, they were treated royally. But when they got to me, the fourth, my dad said, look, take a look. Your sister's got most of the good stuff. Thank God you're smart enough and you don't need it. So go hustle and pay for your own, not only high school, but college. So when I got to college, I had to get a full-time business, because driveway sealing was just a summertime business. It was good, made money, but I said, I need something year round. I started a heating and air conditioning company my senior year going into college, senior year of high school, summer of going into college. So my freshman year of college, I started fresh in school, but with a heating and air conditioning company that I went to every single day after school, running leads and selling jobs.
So one of my problems as an interviewer is I read the freaking book, and then I want to interject and tell you your own story, because I feel like you missed one of the coolest parts of the story, which is people weren't paying you to seal their driveway. It's like, who needs this? Then you had a relative who said, tell you what, do mine, do it for free. You said, I'm not doing it for free. Do it for cost. Fine. Do it for cost. And then you can use me as a reference. So you showed the before and after photos to people and said, do you want this? And once you could visualize it, people could understand why they would want it and what the difference
is. I mean, you read my book.
That's I did. So here's the thing that I don't understand. The early days, I'm looking at you. You're such a classy guy. I'm looking at every part of you. Even before we got started, when you were leaning up, I looked at your freaking biceps. Dude, you got biceps. You're built.
I got to work out every now and then. I wrestled 4 years in high school
So I'm looking at the details. Here's the thing that I'm trying to understand, Kevin. You're a smart guy. Why did you want to go and do heating and air conditioning? This is very blue collar work. I can understand your dad, a World War II veteran. This is what he gets started.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want to do something more?
This is long before the internet. I mean, and by the way, this is why I did heating and air. I realized that I could get a list from the courthouse of everyone that just bought a new house.
Okay.
And so I then cross-referenced it, got phone numbers, and we'd call them and say, look, congratulations. By the way, we knew they had good credit, just bought a house. It's a huge purchase. And welcome to the neighborhood. By the way, that furnace can be a dangerous appliance. Don't turn it on until we get out there. And we're going to show you how to work it. We're going to clean it. And all of that free of charge, a free safety check. And so—
No upsell?
The upsell was once we got there, we would then talk to them about an air conditioning system. This was back in the early 70s. So now— In Cincinnati, only about 10% of the houses had central air conditioning. So you just bought a new house, you love it, but I'm sitting there in your living room and we're both sweating bullets. How about we put a furnace and an air conditioning system in for $39 a month, because we had financing. We built that from zero to $1 million in sales our first year, 25 employees, 5 trucks going out every day, And by the way, that was in the 70s. That the equivalent of that today would be closer to about $5 million a year. We were cranking.
Where did you learn how to do this? You're talking about a time before Entrepreneur Magazine, Forbes Magazine was not a thing for kids to read. Yeah. Obviously, the internet wasn't around. Where'd you learn how to come up with these marketing ideas?
You know, I will say, in between all of this, and if you read the book, I think this is in the book, okay? But I learned from one of the greatest one-call close sales people. He was in the safety baby high chair business.
Ooh, yes.
And so the baby tender. And this was while I was doing driveway sealing. This is when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. I was doing driveway sealing in the summer, but I was looking for some income during the rest of the year. So I answered an ad, and these guys had, at that time, it was a $300 high chair, which today is at least $1,000, okay? But it was a safety high chair used in Children's Hospital, Cincinnati. The baby could not fall out of it, could not tip. It was an amazing product, and I was selling 3-4 of those a week, making about $150 a sale, or maybe 120, whatever it was, but making some nice money as a kid in high school. But I learned how to sell and how to close.
So he got you in the door by saying at malls, I think, enter to win this trip. Everybody won the trip. They all got the tickets. Hardly any of them used the tickets, but you then went to deliver the prize. They saw that they genuinely won, and now you had your entry and you sold to them. If they said, look, I can't afford this, I wasn't in the market to buy, what did you learn about how to close sales from somebody who wasn't coming to you to buy?
Well, the key thing in closing sales, because if I handle that objection, and there is a way, it's very simple to handle that objection because we had financing. You can't afford it. Can you afford $1 a day? Can you afford 30 cents a day, right? We get down to the number of what you can't afford, and then we close. But the first thing you have to do is isolate that objection. Okay, because I would find myself, until I learned how to sell, I would handle that objection. And they'd say, oh, great. Well, we can't afford it, but now we want to think about it. And so they'd give me another objection. And I'd answer 6 objections until they just kept giving me more, until I learned how to move them around to be like, okay, So you understand this and this, and I would resell it. And so the only thing that's really standing in the way is the price. You can't afford it. Is that, I mean, if you had the money, if you could afford it, you surely would want this, right? So it's isolating the objection so that now they said, yeah, if you solve that problem, I'm in. And then can you afford 30 cents a day? Well, yeah, I can. Well, great.
What about if the problem is I'm just not ready to buy from a stranger right now? You know, I'm not in the headspace to do it, which frankly is what comes up a lot with infomercials later on in your career. Someone just sitting there, can't fall asleep. They're watching a guy sell knives. I'm just not in the headspace to buy knives.
We give you a money back guarantee. This company's been around for 40 years. By the way, Children's Hospital? They've got 300 of them over there. So don't worry about who we are because it's used by the hospital. All right.
So you're almost saying we're not deciding now. You're putting it in your house now. You decide later. If you decide you don't want to buy it, we'll pick it up and take it away. Same with the
Internet. You get a return policy. Sure. And by the way, with infomercials, everything is buy now, return any time you want. We tell them they get 30 or 60 days to return. If somebody sends me something back in 6 months, what do? I refund their money. Because I don't want that being the guy that goes to the attorney general and says, these guys don't refund their money. And so in 38 years of shipping products to consumers, never had any kind of real issues other than like a lot of returns for defective merchandise or something like that. But no government agencies.
Okay. So then you sell the business. You're looking for something to do. Founder of California Closets comes to you and says, hey, I'm going to do franchises. Can you help sell franchises? You start talking to people about franchises for California Closets. Some of those people say, you know what? I actually am not into carpentry. I'm not into building this. This is not the right business for me. You say, well, maybe I can offer them a different franchise. You start offering different franchises. Before you know it, you're the guy who's selling people on Subway franchises, right? Yes. And while you're selling them on that, you're discovering all these other business business needs that they have, and you're selling them and making money from there. The thing that I wonder then is, from there, you leap into infomercials. Am I right? How?
Yeah. So I'm selling franchises and businesses and making money and having fun. I buy a house. I'm a kid still. I'm only, I'm in my 20s.
What's the craziest thing that you bought for yourself?
What's that?
What's the funniest, craziest, I can't believe I got it for myself thing?
Oh, an $8 million house.
Okay. All right. Is this, by the way, the house that you needed a loan for and your wife said?
No, that's a different one. That's,
okay. I'm hoping we could talk about that.
I bought some crazy things over the years, but anyway, I buy this house. By the way, my first home I bought back in the 70s, it was a $38,000 house, nothing fancy. Right. But I ordered cable television and I'm like, what's cable? It's like, well, it's 30 channels of content. You get 24 hours of sports on ESPN, movies, HBO, CNN News, et cetera. I'm going through all the channels. I never forget. I was so excited because before that, Andrew, I don't know if you remember, we only had a couple channels, NBC, CBS, ABC, and an independent station. So I get through all the channels to channel 30, and I get to channel 30, and there's nothing there. And so I'm like, I'm trying to see if the wiring's right. I finally call technical support. I'm like, hey, there's a problem. I love this cable, 29 great channels, but I'm paying for 30. They said, well, what channel aren't you getting? I said, channel 30. They said, oh, that's the latest channel. It's the newest company, Discovery Channel. They don't have a budget for 24 hours a day. They produce 18 hours a day. That's all we run. 6 hours is going to be blank.
Okay.
And I'm like, you're kidding me. There's going to be nothing on for 6 hours. What if I have something to put on there? They said, come on down and let's meet. I set up a time, went in and met. And that's when I said, I'm going to start putting products on this slot. So we started putting kitchen products and that was the beginning days. This really is the birth of the modern day infomercial in the early 80s.
It was first these franchises would then pitch their businesses that people could then sign up and get a franchise. What's the first actual product that you got into?
Well, I have to remember because there were so many different things that we were pitching and talking to it at one time, but we did Ginsu knives and we did Food Saver and we did a couple of other, it was in the kitchen category. The Food Saver actually predated the Ginsu, but the Ginsu was another one of ours too. And so And this is interesting because I didn't own the Food Saver. I didn't own the Ginsu. We partnered with the people in the early days. We partnered with the people that had the products. So, because people say, did you invent the Food Saver? No, I'm not an inventor. I'm a marketing player in the business. But what we started doing then was creating our own products that would have that we would own and manufacture ourselves instead of
let's,
having
let's talk about
else.
the Ginsu. Yes, you met a guy who was doing a demo at a food show. What are you doing at a food show?
So because I was selling businesses, remember, uh-huh. I'm selling pizza parlors, restaurants, delicatessens, home and garden stores. I was going to a lot of trade shows because I exercise what I call curiosity overload, right? If I'm selling the business, I want to know about the industry. I'm at the flower shows, the restaurant shows. I'm at the Philadelphia Home and Garden Show.
Just taking in ideas to see.
Taking in ideas. I walk by this booth with this huge crowd. And this is right after I met with the Discovery Channel. And this guy, I could barely see him, but he's got the knife in his hand, cutting through a Coca-Cola can, a muffler, a pair of sneakers.
Yeah.
And it's the Ginsu knife. And if you buy today, you're going to get two for $19.95. And then, but wait, there's more. Six free steak knives, a pair.
He did that in person. He did the wait, there's more.
I saw that in person. This guy, I saw them collect thousands of dollars. And the light bulb went off. If I film that, take it to Discovery, I've got programming, cost me nothing just to film it. Let's cut a deal. I went up and told the guy, he'd been doing this for a dozen years, the same pitch, the same product at the Philadelphia Home Show, then did the Iowa State Fair. And I'm like, Arnold, his name was Arnold Morris. I said, I don't even know what we're going to call this, but it's going to be a long commercial to sell that product. And I'm going to film it and I'm going to take it down to Discovery. We shook hands, did the deal. They did hundreds of millions of dollars over the next number of years. It was mind blowing what started happening. And this is when the infomercial business took off.
By the way, this is what I love about the book, Mentor to Millions. It's just full of these stories. It's like, if anyone has ever met one of these hyper energetic people who keeps coming up with ideas, who keeps launching stuff all the time, and you're like, I'm in awe. How do they do it? Any one of these ideas is enough of a story to last for the whole meal. This is what this book is about. I think your co-founder says that he took his daughter with him to sit and talk to you. She brought books thinking two adults talking, I might get bored. Let me just bring a book to entertain myself. She couldn't look away from the conversation to open up her book. It's like that. That's why I like this book. All right. So then who does the fulfillment? I heard the fulfillment, creation, that whole thing was a big mishigas for you.
I had to learn all that stuff. So, I mean, again, I was a great salesman. I had a great pitch. I got Discovery Channel to do this. I signed with Discovery Channel a multi-year contract for 6 hours a day on Discovery nationwide. All right. Okay. So this was the beginning. And but I'm getting all these orders and now I'm hiring fulfillment centers. They're boxing it. They're this, they're that. They're shipping late. The returns are coming back. They're not telling us about the returns. The people aren't getting their money back. I learned one heck of a lot about operational stuff. And so this is one of the reasons why I say having mentors in your life is so important, because I didn't know anything about fulfillment, about finance, about operations, about credit card processing. And I had a girl in my credit card processing department that had to issue credits. And so one person we had to trust to do that. One day my auditors came in and they said, what are you guys selling for $1,000? And I'm like, nothing. Everything's like $29.95, $39.95. They said, well, last month you issued 15 $1,000 credits. And it seems to be a pattern because it's going to some of the same people. And the month before, she had issued tens of thousands of dollars of credits to her friends and relatives. They started at $30 and they got it to $100 and then to $500. They just kept testing. When are these idiots going to see that we're stealing from them, right? I mean, I've been through everything, but I finally figured out because I'm not stupid, right? I got the right mentors. I got a finance mentor, an operations mentor. That's what Mentor to Millions, kind of the reason why I wrote it, is because I said, I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have some really smart people that helped me out.
Give me an example. I feel like your dad was a mentor.
Yeah.
You talk about how he would have a stack of magazines, just keep going through them, looking for ideas.
Right.
Was a mentor of yours.
Okay. So let me tell you about another mentor. We needed capital because I needed inventory. So I got, Ginsu goes up, we got 40,000 orders. Well, we didn't have the inventory. So now I got to go scramble. Where's the inventory? Well, you can place an order and we'll turn it in 90 days. I'm like, well, 90 days. Wait, these people, they want the product next week. So I had to start slowing down the orders until we could catch up on the fulfillment. But they said, well, look, if you want an order, if you're going to place an order for 40,000 knife sets, we want to get paid 50% down with order. Well, 40,000 knife sets at 10 bucks a piece, 400 grand. I needed 200 grand. I didn't have it. So I'm a young entrepreneur. So I'm my business is bubbling, ready to explode, but I didn't have the capital. I go to five banks, no money, slam the door, don't ever come back. Literally, I mean, these guys, they're like, why would you think we'd give you money? You have no, you don't have good credit or any credit, and you don't have any cash, you got no assets, leave. And so I sought a finance mentor, went to some connections at a chamber of commerce, get together, and they said, hey, you need this guy over here. He just retired. He was a former bank president. And I get talking to him. He says, Kevin, with what you've got in the business, and I showed him some numbers and stuff, he said, I'll get you $3 million. It'll take me 90 days, but I probably will get it from somebody that turned you down already even. And he said, I'm not going to charge you a dime, but once I get that, you're going to want to bring me on in some capacity, and I'm not even going to tell you what it is or if I even want to join you, but let's see how it goes. But I'm going to get you that $3 million. 90 days later, I had $3 million sitting in my account from a bank that turned me down, and that guy joined my company in a consulting type capacity, mentoring capacity, but now he was paying him to do what he did. And he brought on legal people, operations people. We grew the business to $500 million eventually after that. So I needed the strength of having a great team around me, the dream team, as I call it.
Did I remember right? Did you at one point then also go bankrupt, or one of the businesses went bankrupt? What happened?
Yeah. So this is, you know, there's always learning curves. So I had prior to this, I had like a dozen products that were running. And so you said fulfillment, how tough that was, right? But we also had problems with some of the manufacturers, right? I mean, every now and then we would get a really bad batch of goods, and we'd find out after we would pay for them, get them in, ship them to the customer, and we'd find out 30% of what we shipped was actually broken or defective when they opened the box, because it comes over from China, it's rattling at this and that. So one day the bank came in and they were processing our credit cards, but now they got nervous because there was a lot of complaints against this one item. But they didn't know, like, well, we got all these complaints on this company. They grabbed millions of dollars out of our bank account, which
credit card processing company
extra.
Did.
It just was coming in and going out, but they had a chance to get it before it went out.
Well,
it was
who's our, they? Who grabbed that?
It was our bank. It was our credit card processor.
Right. Okay.
Back in 1990, and so now what we sat down with the bank, and they said, "I said, why did you do this?" They said, "We're getting all these complaints." Well, it was one product that was having the problem. So what we ended up doing was isolating that. We ended up setting up merchant accounts for every single product, so that we could run every product as its own business, which it needed to be. We could P&L it. And actually we were paying royalties and profits in many of these cases. So at the end of the day, it was a bad experience, because the one way we could get our money back from the bank, because the bank wouldn't, they were sitting on our millions. I sat with a bunch of lawyers. They said, you can go to court and it might take you 60 or 90 days to bring ahead to it, but by then you're out of business, or do an immediate filing, Chapter 11, and we'll come right out of it. I mean, we were in and out of Chapter 11 within weeks, and actually got the money back because the judge ordered it, and we were flying high from there on. So we learned a lot. It was one of the biggest mistakes we made. You don't put all your products on one merchant account, because if one of them goes bad, destroys your whole company.
That is still even an issue right now online. I trust Stripe implicitly, but I've heard from some people who are in my audience who've had Stripe issues. Oh. And so they will go through multiple credit card processing. Stripe.
Oh yeah. They'll cut you. We've dealt with Stripe, and they're a business. They're decent people, but they will cut your arm off if they have to.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes you just can't understand why. And frankly, they've been more open than others, but
they've taken a lot of chances. I'll tell you the problem they've had. They got ripped off by a lot of people.
Really?
So they had to tighten up their controls.
So you build this whole thing up. You then decide, well, actually, you know what? Let's talk about one more fun thing then. We talked about the big house. What's the funnest thing you had in the house? What's the thing that was most meaningful? The thing that was most fun anyway.
I live in St. Pete, Florida, and we got a lot of sports stars here. And so a baseball star had bought four houses on the Gulf of Mexico, knocked them all down, and built one big complex.
Okay.
And so it was a 12,000 square foot home with a 2,500 square foot guest house and a pool house and tennis courts and basketball.
That's
courts.
That's what you built.
A game room.
It had wow.
The game room had a room for one-armed bandits was a separate room that, you know,
yeah.
slot machines. So it was a pretty spectacular place, but he got traded. He built this house, lived in it about a year, and then got traded to the Los Angeles Dodgers. So he moved out, and the house was empty, and I came along and did a nice deal. So I bought it for cents on the dollar, but it was way too much for me. I actually filmed a couple hundred infomercials there, lived there, but I had my company there too. So it was a corporate buy, and it was a movie set, really. I mean, in fact, we shot a lot of movies there. Spring Breakers was one of the movies that was shot there at that house. And I say, been there, done that. I don't need that anymore. I'm a much more conservative type of guy now, and had a lot of fun doing that for a while, but don't need it anymore. And I've learned, learned to make things simple in my life is a lot better.
Shark Tank. How'd you get on Shark Tank?
So, I'm one day, I'm at a conference, and again, I love conferences, and this person taps me and says, "Hey, I'm here. I work with Mark Burnett, and I'm just scouting around, and your name just keeps coming up everywhere I go. And, I'd love to talk to you." And I'm like, "Okay, hey, what's going on?" She said, "Well, Mark's got a new show coming out. I can't tell you anything about it. It's confidential, but it's called Shark Tank. And, you'll be hearing about it eventually." But, I said, "Shark Tank." I said, "Wait a minute. I know what Mark does to those people on Survivor. Pretty crazy stuff.
God, is this a
what
shark?
Might he do to me on Shark Tank?" I said, "I don't think I want to be part of that." And she said, no, it's a business show. Okay. So anyway, she said, "Look, I'm giving Mark a list of all the people, and you're on the list, and you're going to hear from Mark Burnett's office." And so he interviewed a ton of people in our industry. I had an office in LA, so I went and saw him when I was out there. And, I was sitting with Mark, and I said, "So Mark," and again, I'm a closer. Okay. I said, "What would it take?" Cause I said, "What do you think, Mark?" I said, "We've met, you've got a chance to hang out with me a little bit. You think I can do it?" He said, "Kevin," he said, "you want me to be honest?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I don't know. I have no idea whether you can be a successful shark on the show Shark Tank." And he told me what it was, taking pitches and all that. Right. And I said, "I'll tell you what I think we need to do." And he said, "What?" I said, "Why don't you let me audition right now? Let's get some cameras, and I'll perform for you. Get anybody you want. Get ABC Network here. I'll come back." He said, "You're kidding me." He says, "You're ready to go right now?" And I said, "How long will it take you to set up?" And he made a call. He's 45 minutes. I went in the other room, had the cameras, role played me taking pitches from Mark Burnett's people, and I did what I did every day. I go to trade shows and take pitches. That's my life. I go to the houseware show, the hardware show, the fitness show, the beauty show, the golf show. I love to take pitches, and I did it. And Mark said, put two thumbs up. He said, we're making final decisions shortly. And I got a call a few days later, and they said, you are the first shark that we're going with. So
did you do anything in that trial period where you were trying to stand out, or any of your moves or lines that you knew this is what gets people's eyes to light up?
Are you talking about on the show itself?
No, sorry. When you were in Mark Burnett's office doing this role playing for what it would be like if you were on the show, do you have any one liners or anything that you do to get people interested?
Well, when you say people interested, it's usually the other way around. They're trying to get me interested because they're pitching
to get
me.
Mark Burnett to feel like, oh, this guy's a real showman. The audience is going to light up.
That's the first time I've ever had that question, but I have to think about it. I don't know if maybe it's in my book. Tell me. Okay.
No, you know what? I'm trying to get a sense of what your pitching style is like, what your style of conversation is that, you know, gets people to open up, open up their hearts, to get connected to you, because you're one of these guys who, you had all these infomercials, but you weren't on the infomercials yourself. We didn't get to see you do.
The camera. I mean, why? I'll say this. One of my strengths is finding the best elements of any person. Right. So like, I know that this is how I've operated, but like on Shark Tank, people would come in and they're pitching me their product, and I'm like, look, don't take this the wrong way, but I'm going to license the product from you. I'm going to pay you huge royalties, and you're going to make a lot of money when this is successful, but I don't need you after we shoot the infomercial, because I'm going to do all the work. I'm going to shoot it. I'm going to buy the media. I'm going to ship the product. So I think they were impressed with that kind of a style. Is that, look, I'll put up the money to do it, but I don't need you because I've got the infrastructure, right? And you'll see Mr. Wonderful say that. I'll buy your business, and the first thing I'm going to do, fire you, right? So it's, you know how that is.
So here's what you did say in the book. You said, the reason, I was wondering, why aren't you on Shark Tank? You say in the book, look, or I guess your co-author, Mark Tim, says, he interviews you and he comes away with this understanding that you weren't happy with just affecting a few people's lives who you were investing in. You wanted to be able to help more people. You wanted to be a mentor to more people, which is where the name of the book comes from, Mentor to Millions. But couldn't you do both? I mean, you clearly could get a higher and higher profile from being on Shark Tank. You clearly loved it. One of your books is called Put a Shark in Your Tank.
So in hindsight, if I had known the show was going to go 11 seasons the way it is, my mind might have made maybe a different decision. But you got to understand this. I was going out and filming four times a year and for weeks on end. And then I'd come back from filming and I've got five deals that I did. Now I've got contracts going. I got lawyers. And most of the deals, and you can talk to any shark in all the early seasons, were terrible. No sharks made any money until about season three or four. And it's because they didn't have enough deal flow. So I would come home to my wife, hey, I spent $500,000 on this one deal. And she'd be like, what is it? And she's like, really? $500,000? You're kidding me. I mean, like, yeah, I've made money, but $500,000 is a lot of money to me. It's, you know, I mean, it isn't, you know, hey, just write the check and no big deal, right? I mean, all of us from Barbara, the only one that money has not been the issue for is Mark Cuban, because he's got 4 or 5 billion or so, right? The rest of us were in the, you know, we had, you know, whether it's hundreds of millions or tens of millions, you know, $500,000 is still a lot of money. But I was working all these deals, taking myself away from my core business. My core business went down the tubes while I was doing Shark Tank, because I was in the business of products and putting them on TV and producing shows. I was gone 40% of the time. My staff is like, oh, Kevin's got to be on TV. He's the big shot, right? And people were leaving the company, even though I was on Shark Tank, because it's crazy when you think about it. But they wanted me to be there to drive the business. Our company was going the other way.
How bad was the company going? What was going on at the company?
Oh, I mean, we didn't go out of business. I mean, at one time I had a $500 million business. Then I had a $400 million business. Then I had a $300 million business. Yeah. It was going the wrong way. Yeah. Okay. So, because and to this day, I look at, I mean, if I had to do all over again, I always say I do exactly the same thing. Do the number of years in the segment. I did 175 segments. And by the way, Barbara Corcoran calls me, and you'll see her on the Mentor to Millions book, by the way. Barbara is one of our testimonials here in the Mentor to Millions book. But she said, Kevin, I ran into her at a show, and she said, you're the smartest shark. I'm like, what do you mean? She said, you're on TV, because all my reruns still run on CNBC.
Yeah.
You don't have to invest anymore. We all have to keep putting money out, you know?
And time and all that, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I had a good run. I loved it. And hey, that's why now I have the time to, I sold off that As Seen on TV. I owned As Seen on TV Inc. and As Seen on TV.com all during this Shark Tank time. I ended up saying, you know what, I'm going to sell it. And I did, made a lot of money on that. And now I'm just focused on doing the things that I want to do. I'm involved with about 9 public companies, and I have a little different business.
I also saw you involved in was it Republic, which is a private company to invest
in? That's private. I'm involved in about 50 companies, but 9 of them are public. I'm on the board of 9 public companies.
And then what's this thing that you do with Mark Tim, the co-author of Mentor to Millions?
Mark is amazing. Mark was mentored by Zig Ziglar, and so was I. And so Zig passed away. Tom Ziglar introduced us and said, you guys are both products coming out of my father's camp. You should meet and do business. So that was the, and then Mark and I said, I started mentoring Mark. And, you know, in the book, you'll see that the journey that we take during the mentoring process. And I think that's the key message from me today to the folks that are out there is you need a mentor in your life, and the Mentor to Millions book is going to teach you how to go out there and deal with that world, how to get mentors, how to get the best mentors, and one more important thing, how to be the best mentee of that mentor. Because if you're not a good mentee, you're not going to get good mentors, or they're not going to stick with you.
And now the two of you had a business. We said, look, we'll partner up. We don't even know what it's going to be. We're going to figure something out. He says to you, how about you go coach people? And so you start coaching people, doing one-on-one calls and helping people?
What we did was we went to the Ziglar family and we bought all the assets of all of Zig Ziglar's content for exclusive rights for the digital marketplace.
Really? Zig Ziglar, by the way, I think everyone knows him, but just in case, he is the one of the original motivational speakers who's grounded religion.
This was one of his big sellers, Secrets of Closing the Sale. And by the way, you'll see me, I'm re-releasing a lot of this. This is in bookstores all over. I put 18 chapters in here from myself. So
I had no idea.
So I've created new content. We created a master class of Zig Ziglar.
And so if I go and do a Zig Ziglar thing online, it's you guys who put that together?
Yes,
that's your business.
That's us. Yeah, we own that. And we took 30 of the best videos of Zig. I shot 30 videos to tie into Zig's teachings. And I showed how I used those teachings and explained and showed how it all worked. And that was a master class. We've been doing that for the last 4 years now. And that's Mark and I. That's our business. We've got a couple other businesses together also.
Is it wrong for me to bring up this thing from Act Now, the previous book, about where you're about to buy a house and then Amy, your wife, comes to you and says, I'm looking at your face to see, am I overstepping or not?
You know what?
What happened?
It's just crazy stuff. I went to buy a house. I needed to close quickly I got save 40% on a house, but they said only if you can close within 10 days, pulled the money out of the company, but I got a mortgage approved and now I pay cash for it. And it was $1 million house. This is back in, you know, back in the 80s. So, and then when I went to get the mortgage, my wife said, we don't need a mortgage. We own the house. And I'm like, no, I need the mortgage. I got to put the money back in the company. So she's like, well, no, it's paid for. We're not going to do that. So She decided that she wouldn't take a mortgage out, but we had the discussion. I'm going to grab this money out of the company for short-term, couple-week loan, and then we're going to close on the financing. So when she did that, I said, I don't want to be married to you anymore. Literally, the night she, the day she did that, I packed it up and left, and we got divorced. I mean, I can't live with somebody that's gonna tell me that I don't know how to run my business when I'm doing amazing things with my business and my money. So, hey, I'm running short. I've got to jump, but I know we had great time. If there's any chance I could just tell people what they get when they buy this book. Is that what? Can we do that?
Yeah, I wish that there was even more that you were selling here because the book is so freaking good. I can't believe we're just selling people on like a $20 product. It's that good. There's no upsell or anything in it.
I don't need any money anymore. Okay. So but what we do is this. You can pre-order this book. It comes out in September, a couple weeks, more than a couple weeks. But when you buy this book pre-order, we give Mark and I have a 30-day mentoring program that we give you absolutely free. And this is Mark and I, our content, ourselves, with the folks that pre-order this book. And I don't even know what value you could put on that, but hey, for $20, you get a month of mentoring, you get this book. And
how do we get that? I didn't see that in the book. How do I get that?
This is something special. It's kevinmentor.com. And that's where you find out all these details. And kevinmentor.com, and that's where you get the free mentoring, and it'll show you how to do it all right there.
So kevinmentor.com is where we should buy instead. Yes. We can, of course, buy from Amazon and everywhere else.
You're going to buy through Amazon or something like that, but kevinmentor.com is where you sign up for the free mentoring.
Okay. All right. And this book is really freaking good. Tim is when I first started reading this, I said, wait, it's not in Kevin's voice. It's Mark Tim writing this?
Yes.
Mark is so good at telling your story. It's so good at giving the details. I've said enough here. I know you got to run. Thank you, Kevin, so much for being on here.
I really enjoyed this interview. I love the energy both of us have and good stuff, man. Thank you very much for having me today.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.